From Altoona to York, Clearfield to Erie, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Commonwealth Foundation recently released a report entitled Back to School, Public Education Trends. It covers everything from funding to the claim there is a teacher shortage. Nathan Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation joins us with details. Statistics are now in for the 2022-23 fiscal year state budget. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report analysis on how the Commonwealth did financially during the recently concluded fiscal year. And the right to freedom of speech is being tread upon in many ways, but particularly in the halls of academia. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Nathan Benefield in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Philadelphia Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw has resigned to become a deputy security chief with the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. The police commissioner is appointed by the mayor, and with Mayor Jim Kenney's term expiring at the end of the year, city government can expect it to see a number of major personnel changes. Commissioner Outlaw led the Philadelphia Police Department during the tumultuous COVID-19 pandemic years, but saw a substantial upswing in crime and violence during her tenure. Marcella Shell Coalition President David Callahan has hit back on a flawed study linking fracking to a number of physical ailments, including asthma symptoms and lymphoma. It was conducted by the University of Pittsburgh. Callahan debunked the report, pointing out that none of the researchers actually visited a fracking site, nor did they take any air or water samples or generate any new data or measurements. The University of Pittsburgh has come under fire in recent months for, among other things, squashing conservative speech on campus and a lack of transparency in how state funds are spent. It was once said that cash is king. And now State Representative Russ Diamond, a Lebanon County Republican, has introduced a bill requiring that businesses accept cash, noting that the acceptance of credit cards only impacts lower-income folks who may not have access to credit. Critics of the bill say it should be up to each individual business to decide whether or not to accept cash and that consumers can spend their money elsewhere if they cannot make cash purchases. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It is a claim heard every year under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg. We need more money for public schools. But do we really need more money, and is there actually a teacher shortage? Nathan Benefield is Senior Vice President at the Commonwealth Foundation, and the recent report, Back to School, Public Education Trends, provides the answers. Nate, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Nate, the recent Commonwealth report, Back to School, Public Education Trends, one of the interesting items turned up in this report, and I find it a bit puzzling, and maybe you can shed some light on it. There are more and more employees in school districts, according to the report, teachers, support staff, administrators, etc. Yet the number of students is dropping. How do you explain that?
Well, this is one of the myths we're trying to correct. You'll hear about in the news, the teacher shortage. But the reality is we have a student shortage in Pennsylvania. There are fewer kids going to school, and yet school districts are hiring more and more staff. We've seen in the last 20 years about 8% drop in enrollment and about 9% increase in employees. Now, part of that is due to the fact we've increased funding, so schools are able to hire more. And of course, there's pressure that a lot of the interest groups are more interested in hiring. But the reality, when you think about how the businesses work, when you have fewer customers, you need fewer employees. And a lot of the reasons why there's a teacher shortage in some areas, it's not the statewide thing, but some areas are having a teacher shortage and having trouble hiring teachers, it's because school districts have gone on this hiring binge even as they're losing enrollment, even as they're losing students, as they're losing population. So there needs to be, I think, some correction in terms of thinking about how many employees do we need, how is the money distributed to hire those employees, and right-sizing it with the decline in student enrollment.
Of course, all you hear from the education establishment is it's for the children, it's for the kids. Yet administrative staffs are being bloated. Is this a matter of where the money that they're being given isn't being directed into the right place?
Yeah, and a lot of the money that, you know, a lot of increases we've seen in public school funding has not gone into the classroom. There's been ballooning in administration. There's been a ballooning in building costs, construction. That's been one of the fastest growing categories, certainly in terms of benefits costs. So a lot of the funding increases have not gone directly into the classroom, and a lot of the funding increases have not been tied to the students. And that's something, you know, at Commonwealth Foundation, we've advocated for within our public schools and within kind of the whole education community, of funding that follows the child and is dedicated to a per-student basis rather than funding buildings. But the way the state does it is largely contingent on buildings and districts.
There, of course, was a recent Commonwealth Court ruling here in Pennsylvania that held the school funding formula to be unconstitutional. That plays a bit into what I think you just said, Nate. Is there a situation here where we're not spending enough money on education, but that the money is not getting to the right places?
Yeah, it's much more the latter. And the court, you know, in that ruling, they were presented facts, you know, about, oh, we need to have spend billions more. Court, the judge said, not convinced by that study, but did find inequities in the system. And I think if you kind of dive into how the money is allocated, a large chunk of it is still distributed. There's something called hold harmless, where every school district, every building gets the same funding they got the prior year, even as they have fewer students. That does create some gaps between districts that have been shrinking in size and districts that have been growing. That's created some inequities where we don't have a system where funding follows the child. And as we pointed out, one of the key conclusions of that court ruling, and I think there are flaws in it, but one of the conclusions was that the funding must ensure that every child gets access to a quality education. That doesn't happen if you're only told to go to one assigned school that's been failing for decades and say, maybe we'll give it more money in the future. That implies the child, the student, is the one who has the rights to get a quality education and go to a better school if that's what's best for them.
Well, how can a student get a quality education, Nate, if their school district is failing, but they're by law required to go to a zip code-based school?
Yeah, that is the big challenge and big question that we've framed. And I think lawmakers need to be addressing that as they still have an unfinished state budget and some of the questions about educational choice. But if the only available option for his child is like this school, this is the school you're assigned by your zip code, no charter school options, and a lot of charter schools have waiting lists. There's no private funding for private schools to attend that. They're not even allowed to cross district lines. And there are a lot of states that do allow students to cross over to another district. But in Pennsylvania, it's actually a crime if people have lied about where they live to try and get their kids into a better school and been prosecuted because it's a crime to cross school district boundaries. That's keeping kids trapped in failing schools. And that's not what the court ruled. The court ruled that every child deserves access, and that means you have to allow that funding to follow the child to the school that best fits their needs.
We are talking with Nathan Benefield, and Nate is Senior Vice President at the Commonwealth Foundation, which has released a report, Back to School Public Education Trends. It would seem to me, Nate, one of the trends in public education is that every year we spend hundreds of millions of dollars more on public education, only to come back the next year to hear the education establishment tell us we're woefully underfunded, we need hundreds of millions of dollars more. So what has been happening with education spending? Is it going up as much as it appears to be going up?
It is going up quite dramatically. It's gone up, if you look at statewide numbers, just in the last 3 years, about $2.5 billion in state funding for public schools. And certainly, I think everyone probably listening realizes that local property taxes have also gone up, revenue from that. What's interesting is that at the same time, a lot of the advocates are saying our schools are underfunded in Pennsylvania. You've had now three straight years where the governor, Governor Wolf, 2 years ago, and then last year, talking about the record largest increase ever in public school funding. And then Josh Shapiro this year, talking about the new record in terms of basic education funding increases, the largest ever, the celebrating their great victory of sending more tax dollars to public schools. Again, even as enrollment is declining, but those record increases don't seem to match the other rhetoric from the other side saying, oh, our schools are underfunded, we don't have enough money. So taking credit for giving up more money, but also saying they need more and more.
There is a proposed program called Level Up, and that's part of the ongoing unfinished budget discussions. Tell us what Level Up is all about.
Yeah, Level Up, and it really goes back to how we distribute funding to public schools at the state level. There's something that was called the Fair Funding Formula that was implemented about almost 10 years ago now that does allocate funds based on how many students they have enrolled, the needs of those students, the poverty levels. But not all state money goes through that formula, only a fraction of it. The Level Up was designed to give money to a few school districts that would get a lot more if we actually implemented that funding formula and targeting those. A lot of those are urban areas, a lot of them represented by Democrats. So it gives that money to about 100 different school districts. Only those school districts get funding through that Level Up funding formula. There was exactly $100 million in the state budget that would go to those school districts through the Level Up funding formula. But there needs to be language to implement and distribute that funding that hasn't passed yet and is held up and waiting for the State House to take action.
One of the reasons why the State House hasn't taken action is there's this program was initially called Lifeline Scholarships, now referred to as PASS. All of this is still in the mix, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The State Senate has passed PASS now three times. That would be also a $100 million program. It doesn't take any funding away from public schools, doesn't reduce the funding for school districts, but it does provide for those students who are in the lowest performing schools an opportunity to get a scholarship to go to a private school, and would offer scholarships of $5,000 to $10,000 for students who leave public school. Again, not about taking the money. The school district keeps the money even when a child leaves, but providing options for those students who are otherwise would be assigned to the lowest performing schools in the state.
As we keep hearing that these districts are underfunded, there's also a situation that many school districts have reserve funds. What has your research found when it comes to the amount of reserve funds that school districts are harboring?
Yeah, this is something we've been tracking now for several years. It comes out, the state reports on how much school districts have in their reserve funds. And the number has been going up and up every single year. It's now reached almost $6 billion in reserve funds. Former Auditor General said, if a school district has more than 20% of their funds in reserve, that seems a red flag there of how much they're hoarding. And the reality is almost half of school districts have that amount of money in their reserves. The current Auditor General did a targeted audit, found that a lot of school districts, even while they had excessive reserves, were raising taxes and arguably hiding that money to be able to raise property taxes, even while they were keeping these reserves. That's a big issue, that a number of school districts are just keeping excessive amount of reserves as they're getting more and more money coming in from the state and from property taxes and not using it at all on education, just keeping it in the reserve funds.
I would assume then, Nate, that with school districts awash in cash here, the test scores are improving steadily?
Well, that would be an assumption. If you're spending more money, we're getting better results, but that is the reality is the opposite, that we are spending more money. Test scores have dropped significantly in the last few years. Certainly there's the pandemic era learning loss versus 2019. But even in the last 2 years since schools reopened and students returned to the classroom, those test scores have dropped significantly in from between 2019 and 2023. We're getting fewer, less results. And even before that, test scores weren't great. And despite increases over the last two decades in education funding, student performance has not improved and has declined. So really, the reality is more funding has not resulted in more scholars.
Nathan Benefield, Senior Vice President at the Commonwealth Foundation, the report Back to School Public Education Trends. Nate, tell us a bit about Commonwealth Foundation and where folks can go online to read this report.
Commonwealth Foundation, we're a public policy research and advocacy organization really focused on the state level in Pennsylvania and diving into a lot of the trends of our state, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And people can find out more and see this report at our website, which is commonwealthfoundation.org.
Nathan Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation. Nate, always good to have you here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So-called COVID-19 relief funds plumped up state spending in the 2022-23 fiscal year. But on this Allegheny Institute report, Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi plow through the statistics to explain how well the Commonwealth fared financially. Eric?
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. You recently wrote a policy brief on the close of the 2022-23 fiscal year for Pennsylvania. Can you give our listeners an idea of what happened with general fund revenues and how that compares to previous years?
Absolutely. The reason we took on this topic is the fiscal year for 2023 had just closed on June 30th. And for those that aren't familiar with jargon of the government type, fiscal year in Pennsylvania starts July 1st of one year and concludes July 30th of the other calendar year. So with that concluding and the fact that we still don't have a passed budget as of this recording, we decided to take a look. And what we saw was that for fiscal 2023, the state collected $44.92 billion in general fund revenues. And that was about 6.7% short of 2022 fiscal's $48.13 billion. However, and there's always a however in these things, in November of 21, which was in fiscal 2022's year, the federal government gave what we thought and hoped to be the last of the federal stimulus payments of $3.84 billion, which is roughly like 8% of general fund revenues. When you take out that federal stimulus money, fiscal 2023 actually finished about 1.4% or $623 million higher than fiscal 21. So not exactly earth-shattering number, but a little bit more on line of what we had seen prior to the pandemic when we look at fiscal 2010 through fiscal 2019. And during that time period, the average is 2.66% growth. So 1.4% is sort of in that ballpark, and I think a little more realistic, which is why we now say that the state has to live within its means.
You mentioned that there's three main components of general fund revenues. Can you tell our listeners what they are and how they also compare in previous fiscal years?
Absolutely. The three main components of the general fund revenue are the personal income tax, which as of last year was 39% of the total, sales and use tax, which is 31% of the total, and the corporate net income tax, which is 14% of the total. The remaining 16% comes from minor tax collections on lesser items such as gaming, realty transfers, utility property, cigarettes, alcohol, and then you throw in the non-tax revenue such as liquor store profits, licenses and fees, fines, penalties, and interest. So the purpose of this brief and the other briefs that we have done in the past is to look at the three main revenue sources: personal income, sales and use, and corporate net income tax. When you look at the personal income tax, this one's interesting because personal income tax collections for fiscal 2023, they fell from $18.13 billion in fiscal 2022 to $17.63 billion, a decline of 2.75%. Now, when we look back to our sample size of 2010 through 2019, there was only one annual drop, and it was just like a 0.5%, and that was in 2009. And that was, of course, during the economic recession that went from third quarter 2008 to third quarter 2009, extended itself in through 2010. So with the exception of that small decrease, we'd been pretty positive in personal income tax collection. So that was kind of interesting. Now, there's two thoughts in this one, and that is when the federal government pumped in all that stimulus money, it sort of caused a lot of inflation. And part of that inflation is not just the price of goods and services themselves, which we've all experienced, but the price of wages. And so you had that pressure on wages, plus the fact that employers were trying to entice people back into the labor force. They started raising wages at a fairly rapid pace in 2020, 2021, and even some 2022. And so you had those forces pushing up the wages, which of course would have pushed up personal income. Well, here we are in this latter part of 2022-2023. Now you're starting to see the Federal Reserve System coming in saying we slowed down this inflation. We're going to start pulling some money out of the system, out of the economy. And you're starting to see a slowdown in those inflationary issues. They're still not perfect. Last night was like 5%. They'd like to get down to 3%. But that now starts showing itself in the personal income tax collection. The next one that we want to talk about is the sales and use tax collection. And this one was pretty flat. Quite frankly, it was just a 0.1% growth rate in the sales and use tax collection. Again, probably because we're seeing a slowdown in inflation. And some people probably thinking there may be a recession coming up the way the Federal Reserve is tightening the interest rates. And so we still had $14.02 billion in fiscal 2023, which is just ahead of fiscal's $14.01 billion. And so there's still some growth, but that growth has slowed. When you look at the growth in previous 2 years, 20 to 21, it was actually 18.7%, and from 21 to 22 is 9.2% growth. Pre-pandemic, fiscal 10 to fiscal 19, that growth is about 3.7%. So a 0.1% growth in sales and use tax is a little bit below the pre-pandemic average. Final category we examined was the corporate net income tax. Corporate net income tax, of course, underwent a change. You know, we wrote about this in a previous policy brief. Act 53 of 2022 is scheduled to cut the corporate net income tax by 5 percentage points over the next 9 years. In January 1st of 2023, that first 1 point reduction took place. It went from 9.9 to 8.99. Now, there is another proposal to hasten that, but that hasn't passed yet. But so far, all we know is it's now 8.99%. So we looked at those 6 months from January through June 2023, which have been the final 6 months of that quarter. And what we noticed was that even though we lost that 1 point, tax revenue collections for corporate income tax was actually $527.7 million higher than it was in the same six-month period of calendar 2022. It's about 18% higher. So the reduction to the corporate net income tax did not cause a drop to corporate net income tax revenue collections. Now, six-month sample, very short. We need a little more time. It also is going to depend on a lot of other business factors that the state can enact or impose, regulatory factors, unionization, whatnot, and how friendly is the business climate. As long as that gets better, we should still see some increases to that revenue total. But this CNET in fiscal 2023 garnered $6.14 billion, and that was the highest total in the last 10 years, and about 15% higher than fiscal 2022's $5.32 billion. A lot of this stuff is dependent on things like, you know, the growth of jobs in Pennsylvania. Now, we have a brief coming up that looks at the job growth in Pennsylvania. And from July 2019 to July 2023, which is the most recent data available, we've only increased jobs 2.3%. Nationally, that was 4%. And when you look at larger growing states like Florida, 10.7%, Texas, 9.8%, and North Carolina, 8.9%, you can see where Pennsylvania's lagging. I mean, heck, even New Jersey's 4.8% higher, and their regulatory system is probably every bit as complicated as ours is. You know, they're not right to work, whereas the Florida, Texas, North Carolina happen to be a right to work state. So when you have a slow moving economy, you're not going to have the tax revenue collections that you might want to have. And with federal stimulus money already allocated, it hasn't all been spent yet. That's going to be happening, I think, by the end of this year, the end of 2024. The state really needs to start living within its means. And now it really needs to start looking at more business friendly measures like implementing a right to work law, or like getting rid of prevailing wage, or eliminating the right of transit workers or teachers to strike.
Frank, great stuff as always, and we encourage our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, to read this brief and others. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Don't Tread on Me has been a rallying cry for our God-given right since the founding of the Republic. But some rights are being tread upon. Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
We live in a country where some generations forget that free speech is a protected right, not a privilege. Very recently, a middle school student was removed from class for wearing a patch with the Gadsden flag, best known for its Don't Tread on Me slogan and timber rattlesnake design on his backpack. In a society where students' abilities in math and reading are decreasing nationally, there are educators who are instead prioritizing the policing of free speech and making false claims about the Gadsden flag's ties to slavery. Rather, the timber rattlesnake design, as described by Benjamin Franklin in An American Guesser, published by the Pennsylvania Journal in 1775, is a testament to the 13 original colonies of the United States of America. Franklin wrote, I recollected that her eye excelled in brightness, that of any other animal, and that she has no eyelids. She may therefore be esteemed an emblem of vigilance. She never begins an attack, nor, when once engaged, ever surrenders. She is therefore an emblem of magnanimity and true courage. As if anxious to prevent all pretensions of quarreling with her, the weapons with which nature has furnished her, she conceals in the roof of her mouth, so that, to those who are unacquainted with her, she appears to be a most defenseless animal. And even when those weapons are shown and extended for her defense, they appear weak and contemptible, but their wounds, however small, are decisive and fatal. Conscious of this, she never wounds till she has generously given notice, even to her enemy, and cautioned him against the danger of treading on her. Was I wrong, sir, in thinking this is a strong picture of the temper and conduct of America? When the Founding Fathers outlined a blueprint for our Democratic Republic, the First Amendment was a core tenet of this plan. Though it is a guaranteed right, that does not mean it comes without the need to defend it. Just this year, Harrisburg lawmakers tried to silence University of Pittsburgh students by attempting to prohibit student groups from hosting a debate regarding the issue of transgender politics and sports and culture. Regardless of where you fall on this issue, it's dangerous for state elected officials to attempt to silence the voices of students on a taxpayer-funded university. After much pressure from groups on both sides of the aisle, the University of Pittsburgh permitted these student groups to host the debate, though not without infusing political beliefs into the university's official public statement. In the context of free speech, there's also the discussion of the freedom of speech to donate to organizations of your choosing. Legislation is being circulated in Harrisburg that would codify the Supreme Court of the United States' decision in Americans for Prosperity Foundation versus Bonta, which determined that state governments cannot compel organizations to provide lists of donors in the false name of transparency. Cancel culture is a double-edged sword, and its impact does not discriminate by party affiliation. As determined by the Supreme Court, transparency is for government and privacy is for people. You should have the right to give to charitable organizations without the threat of cancel culture, or, in the case of AFPF versus Bonta, the state of California, coming for you. Free speech is guaranteed. But it will take vigilance from all of us to protect this guaranteed right. Learn more today about how you can work to protect free speech by joining us at AmericansForProsperity.org and joining AFP Vice President of Legal and Judicial Strategy, Casey Maddox's free speech email list. Again, that's AmericansForProsperity.org. Learn about the threats that occur every day and what you can do to protect our rights. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPXZ-FM and WKQL-FM in Punxsutawney, along with WIYQ-AM and FM in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.